We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
They haven't won a World Series in a century or so. So what? They're here. Every April, they're here. A 1-5 or a 7-5, there is a game. If it gets rained out, guess what? They make it up to you. Does anyone else in your life do that?
It's time for Hit and Run.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascists. Throw some ground balls. It's more democratic.
Cubs and White Sox conversation every Sunday morning till Cubs first pitch.
Any bet against my Sox this series is a sucker bet. Of course, I'm not a gambling man.
Hosted by Matt Spiegel.
I want the absolute truth here. Are you 100%?
Yeah, well, about something like that.
You better. You want to make this team.
Connecting with you, the baseball fanatic.
There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
Hit and Run on Sports Radio 670 The Score, 670thescore.com, and the radio.com app.
Time now for Twib Notes from around the American League. All right, that's a bad Mel Allen. I should do a better Mel Allen. As we let the This Week in Baseball theme bring us in once again to Hit and Run on 670 The Score. We use the This Week in Baseball opening theme to open, and we use the This Week in Baseball closing theme to close. We are daring their lawyers to find us and seek us out. Last week we set the over-under, I believe, at 3.5 weeks until we hear something from them. I took the under. Or did I take, the under? What do we do, Eli? I forget, but the main thing is, it was stock music to begin with, all right? If you've ever been in the business, some stuff is you're just allowed to use. So maybe it's fine. Maybe it's fine now. Does everybody remember This Week in Baseball, by the way? As I talk about it, is there a portion of my audience that's like, what the hell are you talking about, Spiegel? Possibly. Look it up, folks. It was awesome. And I actually was an intern there for a couple summers after my senior year of high school and my freshman year of college. But that's not why you called. You don't care about my internship history. You're a baseball fan, and so am I. And here we are to talk baseball with you every Sunday morning. The phone lines are open. Always hour number one is pretty much going to be you and me talking Cubs and talking Sox based on the events of yesterday, the non-event of today, and the state of things here in the middle of the beginning of the season, the middle of the season's first month. Cubs game has been postponed. There is no makeup date as of yet. It's too bad. Last night, I'm playing a little StubHub and SeatGeek roulette. There were $80 tickets last night in the first row behind the dugout. $80 tickets! So my wife bought two of them, right? And we're thinking, all right, maybe there's going to be a game and we'll go and it'll be awful and it'll be cold. Or they'll cancel the game and then we get those tickets for whatever game is made up. And that's what we did. So has she figured out some brilliant secondary market inefficiency is what it is. Has she figured that out? I don't know. Cause maybe the sale's going to get reversed. I don't know exactly what's going to happen here, but I think she might be the Billy Bean of StubHub and SeatGeek is what I'm saying. She might have just discovered something incredible. Chris Kampka is going to join us at 9:45, as he always does, the stats guru and inquisitive mind from NBC Sports Chicago. We call it Cam Connections. We do it every week about 9:45 or so. Jim Deshays is my guest co-host today. Really looking forward to talking to JD. This show was originally going to be at Smoke Daddy, right across from the ballpark, and JD was going to come by, and we were going to sit down and look deeply into each other's eyes and discuss baseball things. Now, we're still deciding. He may come over here. We may have him on the phone. Either way, it's okay. Because the ballgame's canceled, he doesn't have to go to the ballpark. And we're not at the ballpark because the entire remote got canceled. Because it's snowing. It's snowing in the middle of April. It's going to be 35 and snowy. It's disgusting. It's gross. Scott Miller will join us in the 11 o'clock hour to talk baseball. Scott's been everywhere writing for everybody for a long, long time and knows his stuff. It is always a fun conversation. White Sox get shut out at Yankee Stadium. The story from the White Sox perspective was Ivan Nova being terrific in his return to Yankee Stadium, the former Yankee, 93 pitches. Could have leaned on him a little more. Seems to be a trend in this town sometimes. The leaning, the manager's not doing the leaning on said starters. So anyway, but Ivan Nova was terrific. Some good defense to watch. I enjoyed watching Tim Anderson play some defense. Enjoyed watching Yoan Moncada play some defense. Good for CC Sabathia, 5 shutout innings in his first start of his final year as a Yankee. His final year in an unbelievable career, which is an even better career than perhaps you realize. Where he ranks on some of the all-time leader lists, like for strikeouts, it's ridiculous how high CC Sabathia is on that strikeout list, career all-time in the history of MLB. But anyway, so the White Sox get shut out, and Eloy Jimenez does not build upon the tremendous 2-home-run game from Friday night, which clearly means he's a bust. I got that, by the way, on Twitter. I love that. When people say stuff like that, hey, you going to talk about Jimenez taking a step back? No wonder you Chicago guys, you praise local hitters too much. It's baseball, sir. There are 162 games. A good one is often followed by a bad one. You're going to have several bad ones during the course of a year. That guy didn't deserve my attention, and yet here I am giving it to him on the radio. Unbelievable. Text us at 670-11 if you want to hop in. Yes, CC Sabathia, 17th all-time in strikeouts. And look where he is among lefties. You got that list up? Count the lefties. I think he's like 7th or 8th among all lefties, or is it even higher than that?
He's 3rd.
He's 3rd. Why? Because Cy Young, Randy Johnson?
Right, and Carlton as well.
Oh, so 4th.
Right.
Cy Young was lefty, right?
They don't have him listed as a lefty.
Maybe he's not a lefty, and I've just maybe the pictures in the books of my youth were reversed, or I just I gave him left. You know who was lefty? Lefty Grove was a lefty. Also, Lefty Gomez. Those guys were lefties. Steve Carlton, whose nickname was Lefty, he was also a lefty, but not Cy Young. Come on, Spiegel, what's wrong with you? All right. So anyway, Steve Carlton and Randy Johnson are the only two left-handers above CC Sabathia in the all-time strikeout list. Is that amazing or what? Yeah, it is. So anyway, here we are, spraying to all fields, as we do. 670, the score is where you are. Okay, look, a lot of weird things happened yesterday to try and steal your focus from that Cubs loss. We'll get to the things that tried to steal your focus, because they're interesting, some of those things that happened yesterday. But let's not lose sight of what the main story is. 7 walks by the bullpen is the main story, okay? After the horrific start to the season came 18 and two-thirds innings of scoreless work by the bullpen. And then yesterday, Brad Brock combusted on the mound, caught himself on fire, and Randy Rosario could not douse the flame when he came in. And 5 of those 7 walks ended up mattering, including the 1 walk that Kinsler gave up later on. Kyle Ryan got away with 2 walks in the 9th that didn't end up mattering. But anyway, 7 walks by the pen, 5 that mattered. And Kyle Hendricks was bumpy early with fastball command issues, which are very common for Kyle Hendricks. And when he does not have pinpoint command of the fastball, things are in danger of really going poorly for Kyle. We've seen it a lot towards the beginnings of games. We've seen it a lot, frankly, in the beginnings of seasons, last couple of seasons since 2016. And then he settles down a little bit later in the game and a little bit later in the season. But why the hell was he pulled after 87 pitches yesterday? What is that about, Joe? And I wondered it at the time. I was first guessing at the time. And if it was commented on after the game, if Joe explained and Kyle said, oh, this is great, then I missed it. And we can talk to Jim Deshays, but I haven't seen it. I have not seen the quotes anywhere. 87 pitches. He was bumpy early, as I mentioned, but in the 3rd inning, 3 up, 3 down. In the 5th inning, 3 up, 3 down for Kyle Hendricks. In the 4th, there was a hit and a single in there. Didn't give up a run, no damage, but 3 up, 3 down, 2 of those last 3 innings. And just because the bullpen has been decent and is rested after great starts from Quintana and Cole Hamels doesn't mean you have to go to the bullpen. You know what Hendricks does? He settles in. We have seen this
over and over and over, including Game 7 of the World Series when he was pulled before he needed to be, and it led to disarray in the bullpen. My God, let the man pitch, especially after 2 days of watching Quintana and Hamels pitch. It's okay. 87 ain't nothing. I wanted to see more of him. But anyway, Brad Brock comes in, can't find the plate. He walks a run in. And Rosario walks a run in. And then Kinsler gives up a run later. Ugly. And it ends up being 6-5. So those are the stories. The pitching is, and in my mind, the Joe decision and all that. Those are the stories. But, oh, the distractions are fun, aren't they? The distractions are fun. Kyle Schwarber's final strikeout. I think that's a bad call, in my opinion, by the third base umpire. But, boy, to even make it that close on a pitch in the dirt, you'd like to see a little more discipline. This coming off with a brutal at-bat and strikeout by Wilson Contreras. Second and third with one out. Situational hitting.
Also struck out earlier in the game with the bases loaded.
It's Contreras, yes. And Schwarber struck out in the eighth and the ninth. So he's pissed off and probably embarrassed that he swung at a pitch that low. And potentially correct that the call was missed. And afterwards, they talked about, boy, Joe said, is there a way, forget the robot strike zones, can we get something electronic to see if that's actually a swing or not? It's a judgment call in the moment. And I know there was a pitch earlier in the at-bat, I think the first pitch of the at-bat, there was a check swing that was called a ball. So Schwarber thought it was going to be a little more consistent, or thought he was going to get away with it. Either way, so that's one distraction, is Schwarber's final K and his fury. And then Javier Baez in pass protection. I need a scouting report of Javier Baez as a pass blocker because Baez got in front of Schwarber and kept him from demolishing the umpire. So I asked Dan Durkin of The Athletic to break it down for me. This is a true story. And Dan Durkin just replied to me that Javier Baez needs to sink his hips more when delivering his punch. Tighten that core. Keep the elbows in. Strike with his thumbs up. Aimed at his opponent's chest, this being Kyle Schwarber. Needs a better kick slide to re-anchor his feet when losing leverage to his side. Thank you very much for that, Dan Durkin. All I saw was a guy in Javi Baez who turned sideways. You're trying to hold Schwarber back on the side. Get in front of your guy, you know? You really think you could just stop, you know, Cortez Kennedy and John Randall? You're going to stop these guys? You're going to hold back Akeem Hicks, if you're not fully in front of him? What does it say that I went to Cortez Kennedy and John Randall as my first, you know, off the top of my head, pass rusher, interior pass rusher reference points? Then finally I get to Akeem Hicks. Modernize it, Spiegel. But anyway, there you go. Javier Baez, decent pass protection. That certainly would have been flagged for holding. Other distractions from yesterday, the fan interference issues. Twice. One, you could argue helped the Cubs. I think you could definitely argue that helped the Cubs. And one potentially hurt the Cubs. Although the guy that made the catch and then apologized to David Bodie need not apologize, in my opinion. He was in his rightful space, just right there. And Bodie gave up on that ball, folks. David Bodie gave up on that ball. So, but anyway, it's just another shiny distraction. What's more interesting to me is after the fan interference that was not called, it also was not reviewed because, I mean, Brett Ausmus is saying, by the way, that their replay phone went down and that they were unable to get word that they should have challenged it from above. So Ausmus didn't think about it. And you don't, it's the ninth inning. You don't need to, even if you don't have a challenge, you can just say, hey, take a look at that. But Ausmus didn't think to do it. And this is Brad Ausmus afterwards, if you missed it. He said, apparently, unfortunately, our replay phone went down. They couldn't get a hold of us. This is the coaches upstairs. I don't know if it would have been overturned for fan interference, but it was certainly something we would have challenged. Their replay coordinator is a guy named Matt Martin. Matt Martin tried to call four times, and it didn't work. By the time he got to us, the 30 seconds were gone. Then this is what's interesting. Goodwin, the left fielder, added this. That's a pretty big coincidence, comma, but what are you going to do? That is a flat-out accusation of New England Patriots-style sabotage, isn't it? That is flat-out saying they made sure the phones didn't work. Come on. Come on, man. Really? I don't think the Cubs are doing that. I don't think so. Either way, it helped them. But when it comes down to it, look, there's other distractions. Javier Baez with the three doubles, the third of which came on one of the most risky base running plays of his career. And that's saying something. I'm serious. You represent the potential tying run, and you are putting yourself in danger. I know it would only be the second out, and it's second base and not third base. You're getting yourself in a scoring position. It was ballsy as hell to get there. But you represent the potential tying run. If you get thrown out on the base paths in the ninth inning and you're on base already, I know, you want to stay away from the double play. And it was great that it worked, believe me. But that is some freaky, risky stuff. But that's Javi, right? That's what he does. That's what he does, and that's what makes it so much fun. Javier Baez runs the bases like I used to in television and other video game versions of baseball. Force your opponent to throw to the right base. They probably are not good enough to do so, at least early on in their video game career. Go ahead, force them to do it. They probably won't. So there's all those distractions, but the main stories are the seven walks by the bullpen and Joe pulling Kyle Hendricks after 87 pitches, in my opinion. So here we are, Cubs at 5-9. 670 The Score is where you are. It is Hit and Run. It is me, Matt Spiegel. We'll talk to Chris Kampka a little bit later on this hour for Camp Connections. He takes a look at interesting statistical oddities that are super fun with the White Sox and the Cubs. We'll get one from each side of town. Your phone calls are wanted and desired right now at 312-644-6767. Any of the issues that I brought up there regarding the Cub game, any White Sox stuff that you'd like to talk about with them in New York. And 670-11 is how you can text us. You can find me on Twitter at MattSpiegel670. Cubs have been postponed today. Nick Szczepkowski and Mark Grody will be here at noon. So Hit and Run is underway right now, and it goes through noon right here on 670 The Score. This hour of Hit and Run being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. We'll be right back. Keep it here.
Hey, man, sun's shining.
Love the fight. Love how we came back. We had a fight. We just locked too many guys from the pitching perspective. Had opportunity late. Really, really happy about that. We definitely were mentally involved for nine innings, and I love that part of it. Kyle was not that good today in our bullpen in general. We just walked too many guys. We just walked too many folks, and that put too many guys up to the plate for them. But the battle was good.
Kyle was not that good today. No, he wasn't early. I thought he settled in okay. Thought he could have got some more out of him. No need to use your bullpen just because they've been rested. That's always been one of the things that drives me nuts. Hey, it's the eighth inning. Time for the eighth inning guy. Not that Joe always does that, but there for years have been managers, and you know them, who have just been push-button guys. Like, oh, seventh inning, time for me to go to my seventh inning guy, regardless of whether your starter was rolling, regardless of whether the matchup made sense. I mean, people are better now, and they're smarter now, but still as an overall concept, just because you have a bullpen and they haven't thrown that much doesn't mean you got to use them. Let your starter go deeper! Loved seeing Hamels and Quintana go as much as they did on Thursday and Friday. It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score. 670 The Score. This portion of the show is brought to you by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th through August 18th, 2019. Visit BMWChampionship.com. Because of weather concerns, they got rolling at Augusta early, and they have threesomes, which I'm sure Tiger is into in many, many different ways. So Tiger's out there with two other golfers, both young golfers who grew up idolizing him. And Tiger's out there with Molinari and one other Jamoke. And then Brooks Koepka's out there. They're all rolling now. No late nights. No sleeping in for the
Tiger
leaders.
Tiger's one back of Molinari right now.
Okay. And but he's on in that final threesome, though, right? I mean, you'd think it's his final threesome after everything that he's been through and all the trouble that it caused in his life, but I don't know. Who am I? Who am I to judge anybody, Eli? I'm no one. So the Masters is rolling. There is no Cubs baseball today. It has been postponed. Nick Szczepkowski and Mark Grody will join you at noon. Me, Matt Spiegel, here with you before then. Jim DeShays will be my guest co-host at 10 o'clock. Looking forward to talking to JD. This is Buzz in Buffalo Grove on 670 The Score. Hello, Buzz.
Hey, Spiegel. What's up? Good news about those tickets your wife got. I think I had tickets for today also. We were hoping to see Trout. And
yeah.
Of course, it turns out he wasn't in town. But the Angels are in town in first weekend of September to play the White Sox the same weekend. The Cubs are up in Milwaukee. Conceivable. We have a daytime game at Wrigley, and then they road trip back up to Milwaukee. How's that sound?
Is there an off day for the Cubs in there? I have to call.
No,
up the...
no. They just it's just that they're playing the Brewers in night games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and the Angels are in Chicago playing night games against the White Sox at the same time.
Well, it's always a hassle when it is a team from the West Coast that only makes one trip in. Thank you for the call, Buzz. Check out the Angels schedule because the Cubs have an off day on the 4th of September, right before that Milwaukee series. His idea of the Cubs playing a day game at Wrigley, then hopping a bus and going up to Milwaukee to play at night. No, that's not going to fly, nor is a split squad game like it would be for spring training. But where are the Angels on the 4th of September?
In Oakland.
In Oakland, playing on the 4th.
Correct.
And then they are in Chicago to play the White Sox that following weekend. And I would assume that's the only time that the Angels are back in Chicago to play either team. So this could be tricky. You could end up looking for a day when the Cubs have an off day on a West Coast trip and the Angels happen to be home. You're looking for a mutual off day. Or this could be one of those games that gets pushed to the if we have to play it, we'll play it category at the end of the year. This is why they waited until this morning to bang it. Because they were praying and hoping they could find a way to get it in. But you saw Brad Ausmus yesterday saying, look, we don't want to burn a starting pitcher and sit around the ballpark all day. That would not be ideal. And they are not going to force them to do that because it's snowing. And it's going to snow all day in the middle of baseball season. I like your creativity, Buzz. You can imagine. All right, let's do a 10 a.m. game. A 10 a.m. game at Wrigley on Friday morning. And then... and then the Cubs can go up to Milwaukee to play a 7-10 that night in Milwaukee. And the White Sox can go catch a nap and go catch a tween games nap and then go down to the South Side. Not going to happen. This is Gerald in Maywood on 670 The Score. Hello, Gerald.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Nobody can get away with walking 7 and 4 innings, but you look at this Cubs pitching staff, nobody really has plus stuff. They have to throw strikes. You know, they're going to give up some home runs here or there because they really don't have much of an ability to make mistakes, but they don't really have plus stuff on that staff.
I would say that there's guys that have plus stuff, but what they don't have is serious swing and miss power stuff. And I think that's what you're saying, right, Gerald?
Right.
And the numbers bear that out. I went over them a lot last week, the contact rate, the swinging strike rate, the hard contact rate, stuff like that. In a swing and miss league, they do not have guys like that. They need Morrow to come back. He will give them that guy at the back end of the bullpen, and Strope, when he's rolling, can be better. But no, so you're saying they need to throw strikes.
Yeah, because they can't give up all the extra base runners. They can't get away with that. But like you said, they're above the league average in hard contact. Some of that hard contact is going to leave the yard.
Mm-hmm.
This team is going to give up more home runs than average. And, you know, I mean, Hamels gave up a moonshot for the one run he gave up in 8 innings, but the bases were empty. He wasn't walking people all over the place.
Absolutely. No, I thought Hamels and Quintana did brilliant jobs, and Hamels following Quintana made a lot of sense. I spoke about this yesterday a little bit on Inside the Clubhouse, and thanks for the call, Gerald. Those guys both used all their pitches. Quintana used 13 changeups on Thursday night. Last year, he threw 6% changeups, the lowest percentage of his career. He talked in spring training about needing to use it more, and he did so on Thursday night. He had all his pitches rolling. So by the time the third time through the lineup came, Quintana was using everything, and which is what he did in his best White Sox years. He threw the changeup at 12% one year for the White Sox, 10% was another, 9% was another, 6% last year was not going to work. His stuff is not strong enough. It is not overpowering enough to make him a two-pitch pitcher. So, and then Hamels yesterday, or on Saturday, or on Friday, I should say, Hamels on Friday threw 24 changeups out of 106 pitches. And in his two starts combined before that, he'd thrown 27 changeups. So he followed Quintana in doing something that seems simple but sometimes is forgotten, which is use all your stuff. Execute. Use all your variety. It's what they want you, Darvish, to do more. If you heard Theo Epstein with me and Danny Parkins on Thursday, he was talking about how he wants Yu Darvish to use more of the range of his pitches. Yu Darvish can get very dependent on fastball and whichever breaking pitch he feels good about. But use more, use more. So you keep them off base. So texture says, how's Carl Edwards doing in the minors? Because that's a guy with swing and miss stuff when he's rolling. I don't know. And I don't want him to do well. See, that's a terrible thing to say. What I mean is, I can't imagine myself ever trusting him again in a big moment in that bullpen. It's hard for me to see. Let me give you an example. Let's play it out. Carl Edwards throws very well in the minors. Refines his mechanics, refines his consistency, comes back up, and is really good for a month and a half. Has one or two bumpy outings in August. Walks a few guys in one outing in September that scares you a little. Then comes the playoffs. How are you feeling about Carl Edwards when it's the seventh inning or the eighth inning of a huge game? I'll tell you right now, I'm still not feeling good. It's the guy is just too erratic in terms of knowing and controlling his own delivery. Repeatable delivery, equaling control, equaling getting the most out of your stuff. He just does not have that. Whether it's him being flighty, whether it is a concentration issue, whether it is physically he's too wiry and it just something doesn't flow. It is incredibly difficult at the highest level to repeat your delivery over and over and over again. And all of them have to do that. And Carl can't. So I don't think I'm gonna be trusting that kind of no matter what happens. Interesting text here at 670-11. I wonder if you guys agree. Just talking about listening to how Joe Maddon talks about Kyle Hendricks. It seems the way Joe handles and talks about Kyle that he doesn't really seem to like him as a player. Hey, you're not the first one to come to that sort of assessment. Kyle wasn't very good today. Huh? And all the different times that Kyle's been pulled early, there's something has seemed up Joe's craw about Kyle for a long time. I agree with that. This is Mark in Michigan City on 670 The Score. Actually, Mark, hang on. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have clinched their third straight division title. Be there today at 4 for the last regular season home game. First 1,000 kids receive a free admission to Raging Waves Water Park. For tickets or playoff info, visit ChicagoWolves.com. What do you say, Mark? What's going on?
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Very good.
Good talking with you. You know, I keep hating to beat a dead horse with the White Sox, but, you know, Art Garfine was talking to Rick Hahn 2 weeks ago, and he made the quote out there that social media might interfere with the Manny Machado deal, which is a bunch of garbage and interference. I think he's ran for Reinsdorf. It came out in Forbes magazine the White Sox had a net income last year, $77 million. You could have put Machado 1 year salary, $32 million, you'd still have $45 million. You lost almost 100 games. Your average attendance, I think, was 14,000. You'd be rolling in the dough, even for a 10-year deal. That's all the White Sox had to do is answer San Diego's deal. They would have had them. There would have been a problem with nothing. And it's just so ridiculous. And I remember when San Diego signed him, you were upset. Parkins was upset because that would have been great to have him come to town just to be able to cover that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mark, thanks for the call. And look, I understand if you're still in that headspace. I lived in that headspace for a while because the saddest part of all of this, remember, is that they wanted him. They legitimately wanted him. This was no dog and pony show. This was no pretend we're interested for the fans. They went ahead and did the recruiting pitches at the highest order. They offered him a lot of money. They went and signed his brother-in-law, who he loves. They went and signed John Jay, who he loves. They really wanted him. They just drew an arbitrary financial line in the sand between $250 and $300 million. And he got exactly what he wanted. And if the Sox had offered him exactly what he wanted a month prior to that, I think he would have been a Chicago White Sox. I really do. If they had just said, okay, yes. And in addition to everything else we're doing, here's your 300. I mean, I firmly believe that everything they did with the recruiting and the familial stuff was supposed to, it could have made the difference, all things being equal. They wanted it to make the difference without all things being equal. They wanted to get him at their price, as small as a concession as it may seem, that last $50 million. It's guaranteed mailbox money every 2 weeks. But look, we've talked about this. We've dealt with this. We've processed this, except for Mark in Michigan City, who has not processed it. But I understand. But move on. Try to move forward. They have that money still. They'll try to spend it on somebody. If Anthony Rendon doesn't sign before the year's end in Washington, he will be the absurd prize of next year's free agent market. And he's off to a great, great, great start. It's hard to imagine the Nationals letting him get away, but they let Bryce Harper get away. This is Ted in Alexandria, Virginia, or Washington? I can't see the state. Ted, welcome in.
It's pretty close. We're in Virginia. Right. Three things, Speaks. Yeah. First, the Carl Edwards that struck out Trout and Pujols back-to-back. That guy is gone. We're never seeing that guy. I will never trust him again.
Right? I can't imagine ever feeling that good. And thank you to the texture who looked it up. 2 1/3 innings, 3K, no walk, no runs for Carl Edwards in Iowa so far. But anyway.
Yeah. And as far as Madden goes with Hendricks, I'll never trust Madden with Hendricks because he clearly doesn't understand that Hendricks is a very good pitcher. And the third thing is Schwarber in the clutch is awful. I don't care that that pitch was a check swing yesterday.
Can't swing.
He should have never been swinging at that pitch. And yeah. He's been terrible in the clutch. And I'm a huge Schwarber fan. I've been trying to defend the guy for 2 years, but I give up on him as well.
Wow. Yeah, you know, when do you give up on these guys? I have not given up on Schwarber, and in fact, earlier in the year, I thought he looked terrific. He's better when things are simplified, and as, again, this is something that we spoke about with Theo and something that's been out there. Kyle is not a guy who you want to overwhelm with a ton of information about swing plane, about sequence, about how guys are attacking him, about all sorts of different things. It can overwhelm him. And he said so, and that's fine. It's not calling a guy stupid. It's just like it depends who you are and how you process information. Doesn't work for Kyle. See ball, hit ball. Simple, clean swing. And he had looked really good to start the year, but now he's 2 for 24. And, you know, he was 2 for 23 at that point, having struck out in the eighth, pressure on in a massive, massive way. And he swung at that absolute trash in the dirt. I know it's hard. Boy, baseball's hard. But that's rough. Although I'm not there to give up on Schwarber. I'm dangerously close. I'm dangerously close to giving up on Albert Almora. I know so many have been pining for him to have his chance. He has been handed his chance on a silver platter this year. Ian Happ is not there. Here is your playing time. Here is your playing time against righties. Here is your opportunity. Here was your entire offseason that you spent tweaking the approach, feeling great about it. Here's the spring training when we heard so much about how you were going to take it, be able to take it to that next level. And then here you are hitting absolutely everything on the ground, leading the world in ground ball rate. I like Albert as a guy a lot. I think he'd be a very useful fifth outfielder, maybe fourth outfielder. But in terms of full-on center fielder / leadoff guy, no, man. I'm not seeing it. 670, the score is where you are. Callers, hang on. 312-644-6767. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.99 every day. Subway, make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. 670-11 if you want to get in via text. And we'll talk to Chris Kamka, do Cam Connections when we come back. Jim Deshea is at the top of the hour on Hit and Run here on The Score. Welcome back in on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Good morning to you. I love following at C. Kamka on the Twitters, and maybe you do too. He is Christopher Kamka, the Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago, and he joins us every week on Hit and Run to tell us what he has found numerically the most interesting with both the Cubs and the White Sox this week. What's up, Chris?
Hey, man, I guess that's 2 weeks in a row. I officially have theme music now.
You do have theme music. This is true. That's Connection by the Stereo MCs. Talk again. I think your phone might sound bad. Give me another shot.
Okay, how's this? Any better?
Nope, that's horrific. Hang on, Chris. We're going to hang up and call you back because you sound distorted, and we just can't have that. It sounds like a muddled AM radio broadcast, and we've all been there, and we don't listen to those. That's why we tune in digitally at 670thescore.com/listen. It is why we use the radio.com app to listen to Hit and Run. That's also where you can download the podcast of Hit and Run. Within just a few hours of the show, if you missed it, if you missed last week when Ryan Dempster was the guest co-host, you can find that over there. Also, the podcast available at iTunes as well. And they've got new fancy new art. They've got like a picture of me grinning with my Chicago flag baseball shirt on. And we're going to have a different guest co-host every week. It's going to be a lot of fun, I promise. By the way, did you know that on this date in 1925, the first regular season Cubs game was broadcast on the radio? Speaking of radio broadcast, that's today, 1925. 38,000 people at Wrigley for a season opener. Cubs beat the Pirates. Yes, the Pirates, 8-2. In 1925, that was the first regular season Cubs game on the radio. Cubs games are right here on 670 The Score, but not today because they are snowed out. Let's reestablish with Chris Kampka. What do you say, sir?
I'm back.
Oh, and it's delightful. And yes, you have theme music. Speak to me on the Cubs and or the White Sox this week. What got you going numerically in your inquisitive mind?
Well, okay, let's start with the White Sox. And, yesterday they held a one hit. So let's go back another day. Eloy Mania, let's cover that a little bit.
Well, that is the main story of the week. Both of those home runs on fastballs and the easy power with which he generates just absolute bombs. Very comfortable swing. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so his first two major league home runs averaged 435.5 feet,
okay,
which is 100.5 feet more than the home run Aaron Judge hit yesterday. So how about that? But there's a lot of cool White Sox nuggets here. I mean, he had his first two career home runs in the same game. So the last White Sox player to do that was Jose Abreu back in 2014 at Coors Field. But taking it a step further, he's the first visiting player to hit two home runs, his first two career home runs in the same game at Yankee Stadium, new or old, since Manny Ramirez on September 3rd, 1993.
Wow. Young Manny of the Cleveland Indians, who was born and raised, or maybe not born, but raised in New York. So yep. I think that was a story in and of itself, was that this New York kid that the Yankees didn't have.
Yeah, so I mean, think about it. When you always talk about the intimidation of coming into New York and playing there, well, this is a giant stage, and he came through big time.
Wow. Yeah,
that was great to see.
Very cool.
He's one of the youngest White Sox players ever with a multi-homer game. There's only four White Sox players that have hit a multi-homer game younger than Jimenez.
Hmm.
So the most recent being Harold Baines in 1980. Huh. So there's some names that come up already. And he's not just hitting home runs. He's got six multi-hit games already in his first 12 career major league games, and no White Sox player has done that since 1998.
Wow.
So there's stuff here.
Yeah, it's this. What makes Eloy so fun is the fact that he doesn't swing and miss a ton as compared to other sluggers of his stature, and you've already seen that. Before the power came, it was already getting some singles here and there and making contact. So there is a thought that this will unleash the floodgates. All right. Go ahead.
I do love seeing that, though. I love him taking those singles early on.
Yes. Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And then when you get pitches you can drive, then the confidence is there. And boom, that was fun. Also, I realized he had 25 people, family and friends there on Friday night, including his parents, who were there to watch those first two home runs. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome when you can get the family there to see it.
All right, switch sides of town for me, sir.
Okay, so the Cubs pitching was a train wreck early on. Well, since they got to Wrigley Field, that's a 2 ERA in five games now. Up from, you know, that's way down from 7.51 on the road in the first nine games. It's a very positive development, and I didn't think that pitching could possibly be that bad the whole year round. I personally think the hitting is a little more, it's something that I think could be a little more sustainable, the hitting. So, I mean, you'll get the pitching eventually. They'll turn it around. But a couple more notes on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, the top two strikeout performances this season by a Cubs pitcher are both by Jose Quintana. He had 11 in a start on Friday. But the second most strikeouts in the game by a Cubs this season is Quintana in relief with 8 strikeouts on March 30th. So the top two are Quintana in two different, completely different roles. He's one of 4 Cubs with a 4 or 8 strikeout start and an 8 strikeout relief appearance in the same season in the last 100 years.
That's fun. So 4 different guys in the last 100 years have struck out 8 or more in both a relief appearance and a start.
Yeah, for the Cubs in a single season. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And one little note on Kyle Hendricks. Yeah, he struggled so far this year, but he has extended his streak to 6,631 consecutive pitches without a wild pitch.
Wow.
Now that's including postseason. So he's doing his thing there. He'll come around. He's just been hit really, really hard. Way too many hits per innings pitch, and I don't think that's a sustainable thing at all. I think you'll see him come around as the season goes around.
Thank you, Chris. It's good stuff. 6,000 plus without a wild pitch. Now I'm wondering, and maybe you don't know, what is the most total number of pitches or the most innings without a wild pitch by anybody in baseball history?
That's a good question. We'll have to dig in and see if we can find that by the time he finally throws a wild pitch.
Yeah, right?
But, man, I've got one little more nugget here, and it's not pitching related, but it's a Cub note. All right, so if you were to take the 47 players this year with 4 or more home runs, there's only 3 of them that can say they have twice as many walks as strikeouts.
So 37 hitters with 4 or more homes, 47 hitters with 4 or more home runs, mm-hmm. and only 3 of them have...
3 of them have twice as many walks as strikeouts this year.
Wow. Is Jason Hayward one of them?
Yes, he is.
How about it?
8 walks to 4 strikeouts, 4 home runs. The other two are Michael Franco with 11-4 and Mike Trout with 13-4.
Wow.
I mean, who would have imagined that we'd be running off that list at this time?
That is awesome. That's a great one. I like that. So guys who have hit for power so far a little bit and have walked more than twice the number of times they have struck out: Michael Franco, Mike Trout, and Jason Hayward. Chris, you're the best, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
You got it. It's Chris Kampka of NBC Sports Chicago. Hayward, man. I was looking yesterday at the top guys in OPS, and as of yesterday morning, there were 3 Chicago players in the top 15 in OPS: Wilson Contreras, Tim Anderson, and Jason Hayward in all of baseball in OPS. Hayward yesterday with a very hard deep hit to the left center field gap as well. So it's pretty tremendous to see him rolling. We'll talk some Cubs. We'll talk some baseball. We'll talk some history of the man's career as well with our guest co-host, Mr. Jim Deshaies. Do you know that he played with, at different times, Gary Sheffield, Fred McGriff, Tony Gwynn, Dave Winfield, Kirby Puckett, as well as Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell, and the scuffer himself, Mike Scott? I got stuff I want to talk to Jim Deshaies about. We'll do that next, right here on 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.